Okay, we started Din Malchus Dina the other day, and let us continue in Din Malchus Dina. All we really did the other day was we started to show the different possible bases for Din Malchus Dina, and we pointed out that really, even though there are like six, seven, eight different possible reasons that one can suggest as to why we have such a notion of Din Malchus Dina, Rav Asher Weiss at least believes that it really boils down to two. It really boils down to the Rashbam / Chumash Hadeshen and the Ran / Rashba Rush. The Rashbam / Chumash Hadeshen is that everybody accepts the government's authority. By living in that place, we are maskim that the government has authority over us in that place. Period. The Ran in Nedarim says that no, it's not about our acceptance. What did the Ran say? And remember? It's not about our acceptance. What is it? It's that the king says, what? It's good. I own the land. It's my land. You want to live here? You live with my rules. And if not, agarish eschem min ha'aretz. I will throw you out. And that's where the Ran comes up with this chiddush. Yeah, that's true in most places, but not in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, Hashem promised the land to all of us, and therefore the king has no authority over us in Eretz Yisrael. That was the Shitas Haran. We went through a number of other Shitos as well, Rashi and Gittin Daftes, that it's part of the requirement to set up a system of justice. If they're required, B'nai Noach are chayiv to set up a justice system, so we must be chayiv to abide by it, otherwise that's a little disingenuous. That we say, oh, according to our Torah, you have to do this, and then we will totally be mevatel and disrespect the entire thing. No, that doesn't work. We obviously have to give it some teeth to it if they're going to set up such a thing. The Chassam Sofer learned it from several psukim in Ksuvim. We have the Dvar Avram that suggested B'Shem Rabbeinu Yonah that it's somehow related to Hefker Beis and Hefker. And we started to discuss, does he really mean it's based on Hefker Beis and Hefker, or does he mean that it's a similar mechanism, that just like Hefker Beis and Hefker is Mikoach the Srara, rather than Mikoach HaTorah, the reason you listen to the Beis Din when they do Hefker Beis and Hefker is not because, as we said, of their long beards and their kapatas. The reason we listen to them is because of the Koach HaSrara, that they are in a position of authority over us. So the government has a Koach HaSrara over us as well. Okay, you could argue that in both directions as well, but that's how the Dvar Avram at least explains in the name of Rabbeinu Yonah. It doesn't seem like the Pasha Pshah, but that's what he explains. Rav Asher Weiss had a different understanding. We also had the possibility that it relates to kibush, that Dvar Avram quotes from a Rashba and Ritva and Yivamas, that it relates to kibush, that if a king was kovesh a land, if he conquered a land, so good, but by conquering it, he gets to do whatever he wants, and he gets to set his own rules. And that would explain the Shita and Rishonim, that new laws may not be passed by a government, because that government is not the conquering government. It's only the conqueror that's able to pass new laws. Also very, very difficult. We had other possibilities as well. I don't even know if we mentioned that Chassam Sofer, but that Chassam Sofer about learning it from Psukim and Shir Hashirim, Ha'elef l'chashlomo, Masayim l'notzim espirio, Pirio Chazal Darshan, that a melech is allowed to take 20% for whatever he needs and for the tzorach of the malchus, and based on that we say, Dino de malchus adina. The problem is that pasuk is about a melech Yisrael, so it's hard to say Dino malchus adina is derived from what a Jewish king is allowed to do, and also that's about a melech doing l'tzorach atzmo, not l'tzorach l'medina. How do I know that Dina Malchus Dina works l'tzorach l'medina? One might say it's a kal v'chomer, that if he's doing for his own purposes, we have to listen, then kal v'chomer if he's doing for the purposes of the medina. We also pointed out that there are certain kashas one could ask on the Rashbam, and kashas one could ask on the Ran. For example, what did the Rashbam say? Rashbam said, Dina Malchus Dina comes from what? Everyone wants it. We all accept it. We're all maskim. So we pointed out, was there some sort of kinyan that was done? What kind of, how's that askama? What binds me to that askama? So we pointed out, I'm not sure if we did, that it could relate to what we discussed when it comes to minhag, that, what binds me to not eating gebraks if I'm a chassid? What, because my Elter Zeta decided that he's going to be a follower of the Baal Shem Tov, so now I'm not allowed to dip my matzah in my soup? I never agreed not to dip my matzah in my soup. So what binds me? So we've pointed out, I think, Rav Shechter writes in Eretz Tzvi, that there are times that a community accepts a minhag, and that community that accepts it is not about the individuals that make up the community. It's about the community as a whole. The community is its own organism. And therefore, anyone who's associated with that community is bound by it, ki'ilu, they accepted it themselves. That's how minhag works in terms of minhag of a community. If I accept a chumrah upon myself as an individual, good, I want to get rid of it, I got to do ataras nadarm as an individual. But if I am part of a community that has a chumrah, ataras nadarm is not going to work. I can't do ataras nadarm on a community's minhag. So this could be the haskama that we're talking about. Yeah, there was no kinyan by each person who's maskin. But if that became the minhag and the haskama of the original settlers of that place, and I associate myself with that community, I am therefore bound by that minhag. We've discussed that notion a little bit in the past, yeah?
So how did the community starts anew, basically, but the rabbi is still there, and he just wants his continued minhag, but nobody else wants it?
What do you mean? It's all new people?
There's some communities that have that, where the rabbi... Like, wants to stick with
it,
but everyone else wants to not be.
I don't know. Each individual case, you got to deal with separately.
No, it's not if an individual moves away from the community. The only reason you keep something is because of the community.
So, community can be defined in a number of ways. It could be defined by location, or it could be defined by, you know, if I'm a chassid, I'm a chassid. I belong to the community of chassidim. If I'm a yaki, I'm a yaki. Regardless of where I live, I could live in Washington Heights. That would be nice. I could live in Baltimore. Also, not bad. Muncie, pretty good. Or I could live in North Woodmere, and I'm like feeling like I'm on an island somewhere, you know. But if you're a Yeki, you're a Yeki, and you could still you still belong to that to that community.
I can be with the same group of Kassiris, and not have to more than another. So if I'm in one kind of community and go to another, and I don't
want to
keep this.
So you're allowed to move communities, right? So Rav Shechter pointed out, you can decide I'm not a chassid and I'm going to be a modern Orthodox person now, and then you're bound by the minhagim of modern Orthodox people or whatever. You could decide that you're no longer a Vishnitzer chassid, you are now a Lubavitcher chassid, unlikely change, but or that you're you could switch your community. That you could do, but once you become associated with that community, you're bound by it. So you could decide to move. I could decide I don't want to live in New York and I want to live in London, but then I have to follow. What? No, they all have the same minhagim. They all have the same minhagim. What do you mean? Yeah, I think they all have the same minhagim. That's what I'm saying. It's not about location. It's about, right, what you associate with.
But there has to be some kind of limit on switching your communities.
Oh, so Shachter points out, you can't decide, oh, for waiting between milchus and fleishigs, I'm a yeti. For saying tachno and I'm a chassid. For, right, you can't... Lock, stock, and barrel. Yeah, things can change in your life. You could change your mind. Yeah, I mean, it's not in anyone's best interest to have the instability of switching every 5 minutes. But you're allowed to switch. The Ran, we pointed out, the Ran who said that it's all based on the fact that the king says, this is my land, you follow my rules, that's also difficult. When do we agree to that? You know, why do I have to do it? Let him throw me out. Yeah, okay, good, it's his land. So he wants to throw me out if I don't. So let him throw me out. But does that mean that I'm chayiv to listen? Okay, maybe he's allowed to throw me out. That's not a mechayiv min haTorah to listen. So Moshe Weiss suggests that he thinks that that there's a whole separate mechayev of Din Malchus Adina. And I think there's something very compelling about what he says. He says, according to the Torah, is there a notion, is there a concept? Let me give some background. Sometimes there are concepts, you know, that you'll have a shir that's advertised. The Torah's view on, you know, and fill in the blank, right? And the Torah has what to say about that topic. There's a very clear, it is a concept in the Torah. Well, what comes to mind? Torah's view on?
Whatever you said about the rabbi.
right? Homosexuality. The Torah has what to say about that, right? It is a very clearly something that's dealt with by our holy Torah. Nachon? There are certain concepts that the Torah doesn't really relate to. Yeah, I always thought that people thought the Torah's view on feminism. Feminism is it's not anti-Torah, for Torah. It's not a Jewish concept. It's not. The Torah believes in chiyuvim, in responsibilities. You know, rights. Your right to the Bill of Rights. Is that a concept in the Jewish people?
We have obligations.
We don't have rights. Right? I mean, it's an entirely different... There are certain concepts that just are not Torah concepts. Let me ask you. Is Malchus a Torah concept?
Yeah.
Absolutely yes. It's absolutely a Torah concept. Torah talks about kings all the time. The Nevi'im obviously talk about kings all the time. There are halachos that relate to a king. Halachos of Morei B'Malchus. There is a bracha one is supposed to recite when they see a king. Part of the notion of Malchus has to be that the king makes laws, because that's what kings do. So if the Torah is going to have a notion of Malchus, and by all of the Malachim in the world, Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz, the Pasuk in Mishlei says. What mishpat? Whatever laws he makes. That's Malchus. A person is supposed to have morah shel malchus. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells us why. Because if you don't have morah malchus, ishes re'eu chayim blo. Each person would eat the other one alive. Why? Why? Now I won't eat the other one alive because there's some king living in a palace somewhere. No, because he made laws. He set up laws. That's the real foundation of Dina Malchus Adina. Dina Malchus Adina is a natural outgrowth of the fact that the Torah holds there's a concept called Malchus. You hear? Yeah.
Is that also part of the Shechem and Shechem? Like if one makes a holy system? Or is that...
Well, is that part of...
Like the person says Shechem and Shechem in the Chumash Sharaf?
Yeah.
The same idea of having...
Well, that's Dafka for the Jewish people. That's Dafka for the Jewish people. I mean, that certainly we have. We certainly have to listen to our own laws. But this is even amongst non-Jews in a non-Jewish society that we have to listen to their laws.
Can I just come back over to before? Couldn't it be argued, so to speak, that anything that the Torah doesn't speak about then self-explains the Torah's position on it?
Not necessarily, because...
I mean, it depends on the topic, obviously. I'm saying, are there some things that...
Right, it depends on the topic. So intuitively, we would know, probably, that the Torah believes that every person has a right to live and to breathe, right? Even though we don't talk about rights, intuitively we probably know that, let's say, feminism as a whole is probably not fully consistent with Torah values. But as a concept, meaning it's not something that lock, stock, and barrel is. Something that the Torah is not go race it. It just doesn't talk about these.
You're
things.
Saying the fact that the Torah doesn't talk about not because the fact that the Torah not talk about it in itself explains what the Torah is.
I'm not sure. Like I said, because sometimes yes, sometimes no. So I just think it's better for us when we think about issues. You know, I don't think we should be thinking about. Let's take feminism for example. We shouldn't be thinking about feminism. It's not like, oh, because feminism is such an important thing, that's why we need to allow for this and that, for women rabbis and whatever. Feminism is not, it's not baba cheshbon for us. It's not, we don't believe that there's a value in pushing that agenda if that agenda is not a Torah agenda. Right? The Torah has nothing to say about that agenda. So we have to look at it objectively. Is this something that our holy Torah suggests should be done or should not be done? From Torah sources, and that's why you might say women learning to speak Hebrew is feminism. Women becoming rabbis is feminism. Or you might say, you know what, women learning to speak Hebrew I'm okay with, and because I think the Torah is okay with that because the Torah wants them to daven, right? And the Torah wants them to be able to educate their children on a very basic level at least. Women wanting to become rabbis, I'm not so okay with, because I don't find that there's any Torah value in that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they both might be labeled feminism, but feminism doesn't mean anything in the Torah. You understand what I'm saying? So, but malchus does mean something. We're going to end up talking about feminism for 45 minutes. Malchus does mean something in the Torah. Malchus does mean something. So what? So Rav Asher Weiss comes along in the year, whatever year Chelek Beis of Milchas Usher was published, and he decides in the year, whatever, 2014, that he's going to argue on the Rashba, the Ran, the Rashbam. I know that all the Rishonim have what to say about it, but I'll tell you where Din Malchus Din really comes from. He's not arguing on the Rishonim. He's not. He's saying what the Rishonim are arguing about is, in his Lashon is, Bimahus HaMalchus Shorsha V'inyana. They're arguing, everyone agrees that Din Malchus Din is an outgrowth of the fact that there's something called Malchus. The question is, where does Malchus come from? What is Malchus? What makes a Malchus a Malchus? Is it the fact that the people accept this person as the king? And that's what makes him Malchus? That's the Rashbam. Where we agree to follow his rules. What does it mean we agree to follow his rules? We agree that this person is our king. If we didn't, we would rebel. There would be an uprising. Or is it the ownership that the king has over the land that determines his Malchus? It's about the, that's not the source of the mechayiv of Din Malchus Adina. The mechayiv of Din Malchus Adina is the very notion that there is Malchus. Question is, what makes a melech a melech? What makes a non-Jewish king a king? And in fact, the Mabit in Kiryat Sefer.
What was the first division?
The Rashbam said it's that we agree, this guy should be the king.
Okay, it's based off the people versus.
Right, versus based on the king's ownership of the land. The Mabit in Kiryat Sefer Perek Hei Hilchos Gzela Lach Yudalid writes, Dina Malchus Adina Kedi Alfina Mikrayi De Mishpat Hamalucha Kedinelech Behilchos Melechim Vafila Melech Gai. He says it explicitly. Dina Malchus Adina is because there's something called the Melech. Period. Now, very mistaver. Problem is, if you really just look at the Rashba and the Ran again, you know, you look at how that Ran formulated it, it doesn't really sound like that's what he's saying. Because what does Ran say? That the Melech could tell you, if you don't listen to me, what am I going to do? What did he say? Agarish eschem in aretz. I'll throw you out. So apparently, if he doesn't have the ability to throw us out, then there's no Din Malchus Adina. Meaning, he could be a Melech. He could be a melech, but and according to Rav Asher Weiss's explanation, that's enough. Dina Malchus Dina. But the Ran seems to be saying that the koach to be megarish us mina aretz is the key, and that's why the Ran says in Eretz Yisrael there's no Dina Malchus Dina. What in Eretz Yisrael? He's not a melech. He is a melech in Eretz Yisrael. He just can't be megarish us mina aretz. But that's hard to imagine. Would the Ran be saying that a melech Yisrael is not a melech? He's not a king at all? That's hard to say. So the Chasam Sofer writes in Chosh Mishpah Simvem Dalit that a melech Yisrael's rules are only binding if the people accept them. But a melech Yisrael cannot force anyone to do anything that they don't want. So it has to be accepted by the community. That's difficult, because then really, Iker Chasim and Asefer, the Ran should have said that. And also, like, do we ever find that Rishonim break things into three categories? That there's one category where the Chukei HaMelech are accepted by the people, and that works for a Jewish or non-Jewish king. A second category where the people don't like the rules, so that works for a non-Jewish king, but not for a Jewish king. And then there's a third category where the rules are what we call chamsenusa de malchusa, not dina de malchusa, but the rules are inherently unfair, and then it doesn't work even for a non-Jewish king. So what Rav Asher suggests, the way to view a Jewish kingdom is as follows. He says what the Ran would probably tell you is that, you know, in the American government, anyone ever take a government class here? How many branches are there of government? Three. What are the roles of the three branches of government? College. Executive, legislative, and judicial. The executive is
important to
the president. The right and the judicial. The legislative makes the law. Judicial? Good. The concept of a Jewish melech, what is he? Is he all three? Is he all three? He's everything? Would we be okay thinking that a Jewish melech is mamish a dictator the way, you know, like a Jewish melech is a... it's not really, if you look at it, it's not really what he is.
He's kind of like, you have to follow the Torah.
Who decides the Mishpatei Ha'am? The Torah, as interpreted by the Sanhedrin, not as interpreted by the Melech. As interpreted by the Sanhedrin. The Melech is an administrative position. To be an administrator, to make sure that people have what they need, like the Gemara in Brachos tells us that they would come to David HaMelech and they would say, Amchi Yisrael Tzrichin Parnasa, your job to figure out the programs that are going to be able to help to give people what they need, to protect them, to go to war when they need to go to war, and even when it comes to going to war, the Mishnah of Sanhedrin says they have to go to the Sanhedrin. The Chukim and the Mishpatim does not come from the Melech at all. That comes from the Beis HaGadol in Yerushalayim. You know, the Abar Benel and Shmuel Aleph thinks that Malchus Beis Yisrael is not an ideal. It's only when we ask for one, which is a chiddush. But he thinks it's not even an ideal. But even if you hold it is an ideal, but what is it? So yeah, we have to have a Maso Alecha. We have to have a certain Mora HaMelech. And yes, you're right. He can put someone to death for being Mori the Malchus. But what he does, day in, day out, his job is to look after the people. So it's not a law-making position. So we wouldn't compare the Melech Yisrael to the, you know, the dictator, the Malchi Umos HaOlam. We'd compare the Sanhedrin to the dictator. Right? Meaning, the law-making does not come from the king, it comes from the Sanhedrin. So the Sanhedrin is Dina, has that function that other kings have. Now let's go through some of the details over here. Dina Malchusa. If you look at source number 18 in your packets, if you still have them, anyone still have them? Okay. So source number 18. Magid Mishnah in Hilchos Gzeil Vaveda Perikay Alach Yud Gimel. Kvar horu lo kol balei hora'a v'chein ikar didina malchusa dina aval gazlunusa d'malchusa lav dina. If the king just steals and pillages and takes things that don't belong to him, that is not din. You don't have to listen to that. V'areu gezel gomer v'karkein in exelas uliolim b'rshus abaylamu. And if the king confiscates your land in an unwarranted way, it's still yours. He doesn't own it. V'zemavur b'harbi mekomos v'odos v'ram banzal v'amar. Shimba melech lasos din chadash. Ramban says if a king wants to make a brand new law, aval pishachakak oso lekol, even though it's a law for everybody, Jew and non-Jew alike, im lo hayakein mechuke amlachim arishonim lav din edina. If that wasn't on the books from previous generations, from the initial establishment, the writing of the constitution of that country, it's not a din. You can't do it. The ein kein das Rabbeinuzal, but says the Magen Mishnah, the Rambam disagrees. Rabbi Seinuzal and Chazal, I think, disagree. El arei yochel lasos din chadash shalomer kalos kach yeyanish kach vauncha onish min adin. Says the Magen Mishnah, the Rambam, and I think the Gemara disagree with the Ramban, and they think that a melech is able to make new laws. What's behind this issue? So the Dvar Ram explains that if you hold it's based on kibush, like we explained before, if you hold it's based on kibush, then you understand the Ramban very well. However, you could argue, even if it's not about kibush, you could argue it's about haskamas b'nei hamedina. Haskamas b'nei hamedina means, what do we say? How does haskamas, I never accepted it, I never agreed to do it. How does Haskamas B'nai Medina work that they all agreed? What did we say before? Where does it come from? I never personally accepted it. Where does it come from? Initially, at some point, the community accepted it. Yeah, king's going to make a new rule now? I don't have to listen to it. It has not been accepted by the community. It could be when he makes a new rule and people choose to listen to it, and then it becomes accepted by the community, going forward it will be binding. But at that first stage, when he introduces new legislation, there's nothing binding yet. Not because of kibush. But because of what the Rashbam spoke about, haskamas panei medina. People have agreed to do it. People have agreed to do it means it's like a minhag. You treat it like a minhag. You treat it like a bracht. If a chassid of chassidish rebbe today were to say, I'm starting a new minhag, and the minhag is going to be that you have to have a one-man band at your wedding. For everyone who gets married, only one-man band. So do you have to follow that? Is that a minhag? Is that now a minhag that you have to follow? Betaras minhag? No. But if the entire community accepts that and goes on for a few generations like that and it is accepted, does it then become a minhag? Yeah. So that might be what the Ramban means. Not only about kibush, but it's about haskamas b'nei medina. It's a good question. Right. Is a simple majority enough, or do you need more than a simple majority? It's a fair question. The Ramban, source 19. Zel David Perkei Alach Yilchas. Bamed Varam Amurim B'melech Shemadbeo Yotze Ba'osan Ha'aratzos. Now whether we say Din Malchus Dina, if it's a king who mints coins, Shari Yiskim Nolav B'nei Osa Ha'aretz V'sam Chadaitan Shu Adonayam V'him Lo Avadim. Because they've agreed that he's their master and they are his servants. Avul Mein Matbeo Yotze Arayu K'gazlan Balzroa. But if he doesn't mint coins, he is a pirate. Meaning, if he's not in charge of the local currency, he's just someone who decided to take over the government. He is not a real government official. He's a pirate. He's a listim, a mazuyan. He does not have the right to make a din. Meaning, if I go into your house with a semi-automatic weapon, I fire a couple of shots into the air, I say, okay, listen, the rules are my rules now. So it could be that you'll listen to me. It's very likely that you'll listen to me. But does that mean that Dina Malchus Adina? No, I'm a criminal. I'm a bandit.
What about conquering?
So what about conquering? At what point does conquering make you the melech? Says the Rambam, it's very easy to tell.
Army?
As soon as they start minting coins. Once they start minting currency and people use that currency, it's the recognized currency in that Medina, that makes the person the melech.
Does it make any difference whether the people being conquered
are Italian or Spanish? After a while, it won't. Meaning, well, once they start using those coins.
I'm saying I can conquer a place and mint all the coins on, but everyone's trying to get rid of me.
Yeah, but still, right, he would still be the Melech. Again, Chamsunus is the Malchus, is still not Dina. Meaning, if he's doing things that are unfair, that are fundamentally unfair, so that would also not be a Din. You know, the nafkamina would be, Rashad points out, if you reject Dina Malchus Adina in a given place, what you're essentially saying is, I don't accept these coins as valid currency. I think that this is, you know, it's all monopoly money to me. Right? So he points out the big nafkamina for those Israelis who want to follow the Shita Sarag. They shouldn't be able to use the money. Okay, so they're using money. My nafkamina la halacha. They're using the money. It's not a halach that they're using the money. Where does money play the role in halacha? Pidyon HaBed. You need valid currency for Pidyon HaBed. Yeah. So can you use the Israeli currency? Right? So they didn't think of this kasha. Or forget about Pidyon HaBed. Pidyon HaBed, you don't really need valid currency. It's a chumrah to have valid currency. But you know where you do need valid currency? To be po'd ma'aser sheni. And that's what we still have Meister Sheni nowadays. They're poded on a coin. What kind of coin?
A shekel.
You need how could they have a shekel? A shekel is currency of the pirate government that has taken over Eretz Yisrael for the last, since 1948. I can't do the math right now. Right? 69 years. Pirates, a bunch of pirates. Well, they're a bunch of pirates, then you can't be poded Meister Sheni on it, Shekel points out. It's a good har. Doesn't mean my eskaba. Rav Moshe also points out there are halachos about paying back loans. You borrowed money from someone in Israel last year, let's say. I got a call from a guy just a couple of nights ago. He told me that 15 years ago, a friend of his was getting married, and the friend said to him, listen, I'm having trouble paying for certain things, you know, getting the apartment or whatever. Can I borrow $3,000? 15 years ago. So he said, sure. He lent him $3,000. You know, at that point, the person who was lending the money was not married yet. He didn't have responsibilities. He had the money. He had a job. He lent him $3,000. He said, the guy said, I'll pay you back from wedding money. I'll get some wedding money. I'll pay you back from wedding money. I just need to wait till the wedding till I have the money to pay you back. He asked him for it a few times after the wedding, and the guy never paid him back. He didn't have the money for a while. He said he just, and he didn't stop bothering him. You know, he sort of wrote it off in his head as a loss. He said just a few weeks ago, he lost touch with this guy. He saw another guy a common friend of theirs. He said, oh, you know what? I saw, what's his name in Eretz Yisrael? You should know. He's like extremely successful now. He's like an extremely successful business person living in Eretz Yisrael. He has a beautiful house in Baku or whatever. I don't know. You know, he's doing nicely. So, okay, it's interesting to know. So he shoots him an email. He figures what I have to lose. Hey, doing a long time no speak. I'm just wondering if, you know, there's any chance you'd be willing to pay back $3,000. Within seconds, he has an email back. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I forgot all about it. Of course, no problem. I have the money now. You know, without a doubt. Right? Okay. Good. All's well that ends well. The guy, why was the guy telling me this? The person who loaned the money? He was asking a shayla. The fact that he wrote it off in his head, does that count as mechila? And does he now have to tell him, you know, I was already mochel you, and you don't really have to pay me back, and see if the guy still wants to pay it back, or can he say that's not a real mechila?
Right.
It was a mechila betotlus. The answer is, first of all, it's not a mechila because he never said it. You have to say it for it to be a mechila. Second of all, even if it was a mechila, it's a mechila betotlus. Because it was a mechila based on the premise that the guy's never going to pay him. But if he knew that the guy would pay him, he wouldn't have been mochel. Right? Okay, good, fine. So he was able to take the money back. He got the money back.
Do you have to pay adjust for inflation?
Okay, good. So how exactly, the economics of this are very challenging. Forget about inflation. Let's even leave inflation out of it. Currencies. You're dealing with international currency over here. Yeah, he left them in dollars. The guy lives in Israel. He's making his money in shekels, although the chances are. But, you know, the currencies... How do you deal with that? So Rav Moshe has a whole discussion about this in Yerodei Chelek Beis and Kuf Yud Aleph, that if you borrow your currency, you're supposed to pay back the amount in the same currency. If you borrow in a different currency, so you pay back what it was worth in American money at that time, if you're going to pay back in American money. I mean, if I borrow in shekels, let's say, and I want to pay back in dollars, I got to pay back what that amount of shekels was worth at that time. It's complicated, but that's only true when you're dealing with currency. Right? If you're not dealing with currency, I mean, currency is its own value. When you're borrowing items, it's not its own value. It's estimated at whatever it would be worth. If I borrow this recorder from you, I got to pay you back whatever this recorder would be worth today.
Even if it's 100 times more.
Yeah, but if I borrow $10 from you, a year later, I don't figure out what $10 would be worth today compared to that. No, I give you back $10. You don't adjust for inflation. That's currency. Currency is considered solid, but that's only if you hold it as currency. So this would have a big enough kamina, this idea of dinu malchus dina affecting the currency.
I thought that like when you pay back, when you borrow money or whatever, you pay back the rate that it is when you're paying it back. Not because how are you supposed to know what the exact rate was that?
Exactly. But that's only with currency.
I'm saying so.
Right.
That means you go by the day that it is.
If I borrow $10 from you, I pay you back $10. I don't care that $10 today can't buy me what $10 could have bought me a year ago.
I mean, you, the $10, you look at the rate for today, $10 in Shackville, or this guy back, whatever, he would have to look for now. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
If you would consider Trump to be a king, according to the Rambam, he wouldn't necessarily be the king, he would be a U.S. Smith. Because you're the one making the currency, yes.
The food is the man.
Not, we wouldn't consider Trump to be the king. Trump would consider Trump to be the king, but we wouldn't consider Trump to be the king. We'd consider the American government, all three branches, to be the malchus, not a melech, but to be a malchus.
To
the government? But the government decides on. The bracha is a different issue. That may relate to melech, not malchus. Those are two different ideas. The idea of a melech versus the idea of a malchus. Malchus means a government. Melech means a king. So the bracha relates to a melech because it's about the kavod given to a melech. So probably you would not say it on the president. Most poskim hold not to say it on the president. Okay, it depends. That's really based on kavod or whatever. But the malchus, like for example, the Gemara Masech Sanhedrin tells us that the geula is going to happen when the following three things happen. First, Lahamad la melech. First, we have to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. A melech in Eretz Yisrael. Then, Lahach Rezara Shal Amalek. We're going to wipe out Amalek. And then, Livnos Lan Beis HaBechira. We're going to build a Beis HaMikdash. And that will be geula. So there's a whole discussion that people like to hawk about. Have we already experienced the aschalt of the geula? Has the process of geula begun?
Does it begin or begin?
Whatever, whichever way. Is it underway already? What's step one? Lahamad melech. So what's that? Is that a din in melech or is that a din in malchus? If you hold it's a din in melech, it hasn't begun. We don't have a melech in Eretz Yisrael. If you hold it's a din in malchus, there is a Jewish malchus in Eretz Yisrael. Right, malchus is a government. Rav Shachter thinks it's pasha that it's a din in malchus, not a din in melech. So he thinks that we can confidently say that we've already experienced the eschalt of the geula. Rav Soloveitchik never spoke in such terms. He was a Zionist, but he never spoke in such terms. He never spoke about malchus, you know, about eschalt of the geula rather, that this is geula or not. He thought that it's very good that we have a Jewish government, but not that to look at it in terms of geula necessarily. A third point about Dinu Malchus Dina. The Ramah in Simen Shin Samach Teh Siv Ches writes that Dinu Malchus Dina, according to some, only applies to Karka, not to anything else. Why would you say that? Why would anyone say that? That only applies to Karka? No, come on. Because the king owns the place. If you say like the Shita of who? The Ran, yeah, the Ran and Rashba, exactly. That it's all about the king's ownership of the land, and that's it. Good. If it's about Haskamas Bnei Amadina, it doesn't make a difference whether it's land or anything else. But if it's about the king's ownership of the land, of course it makes a difference. You know, you don't have to say it's only about land just because you hold like the Ran. Meaning, if you hold like the Rashbam, that it's about Haskamas Bnei Medina, then there's no way you could limit it to just Karka, right? If you hold like the Ran, though, you don't necessarily have to say that it's limited to just Karka. The Ran might say that since the king owns the Karka upon which you live, he gets to set all the rules of your life. Which would be inclusive of traffic laws and, you know, taxes and all the rules of your life, because you're living in his property and those are his rules. But at least it's a tenable position if you hold like the Ran that maybe it's only about Karka, because it's that direct link between the king owning Karka and Dina Malchus Dina. A fourth point: the Rama himself holds Dina Malchus Dina applies to everything, right? But then he says in Sifir Aleph, in Shin Samach Tes, that it's only by something that is Hana'a lemelech o tikun hamedina. What does that mean? Benefits the king or the medina, right? Or the country. But things that are personal are not, well, what exactly does Rambam mean by that? What Rambam means by that happens to be machlokas amongst the achronim. The Sma, Sefer Mirusenayin, Sefkot Chav Aleph writes that what Rambam means is that the king has the right to do things, but not the courts. But that's very hard to accept. That's what it means. Rova the Achronim, what the Rambam means say is that Din Machlus Dina is only if it actually benefits the king or benefits the country, but not things that are personal. I have a business deal with my friend, a private deal. I have something with my wife or whatever. That Din Machlus Dina, you know, if let's say Melech HaChashverosh comes and he says, Kol Ish Shorer B'Veso, that's what you do with Malchus. Melech Shote Huzeh. Right? It's not about the Malchus, not about the Medina. It's about my personal marriage. So if that's the case, it's not included. And that's why the Achronim write Yerusha Sabas. We don't say Dina Malchus Dina. Dina Malchus Dina might be that a girl gets a Yerusha the same as a boy, if that were the Dina Malchus. That's my family matter. That's not the king's business. It has nothing to do with how the government's going to run, how the country's going to run. Din Malchus Din doesn't cover it. Problem is, there's several stiras in the Ramah, where the Ramah seems to talk about Din Malchus Din in the context of things that aren't really government related, that seem to be more in the personal realm. For example, in Simur Kuf Nun Dalet Sif Yud Ches, the Ramah writes Din Malchus Din by a chazaka of windows. What's a chazaka of windows? You know, we have windows here in this room, and there's an apartment building over there, and sometimes they might be upset that I could see right into their
Hezekriah,
or something like that. Or I have windows in this room, and therefore I get a lot of natural light in this room, and I like the natural light. So you're not allowed to put up, you buy the neighboring property, you're not allowed to put up a building that blocks all my natural light. I have a chazaka of zoning laws. Right? Well, that's between me and my neighbor, isn't it? Why should Din Malchus Din apply to something like that?
There's a side between the two of them.
Okay, but that's between me and my neighbor. So it could be that, like you said, it is about the Malchus. Because what's going to happen if there are no zoning laws? And no one has to listen to them? The chaos. People will kill each other. Meaning the Malchus won't run efficiently if everyone's killing each other. So things that happen everywhere in every neighborhood, and there needs to be some rules in place in order to make it function properly, then we would say Dina Malchus Adina. That would fit into the category of Hana Al Melech Otikun Amadina. But then there's another Rama in Shin Nun Vav Siv Zayin. The Rama writes Bizman Azeh, you have to be Meshav Aveda even La'achar Yeyush V'Shina Rishus. Whoa! Shavas Aveda doesn't apply La'achar Yeyush V'Shina Rishus. Says Ramah, yeah, Din Malchus Adina. Normally, Yeyush V'Shina Rishus is Kona. So, is that a Tikkun on Medina? It could be. You could argue. You could stretch it out. Rav Asherai suggests, yeah, it's a Tikkun on Medina because otherwise people are always going to want things that don't belong to them. Oh, he's going to be angling for someone else's property. It's a little hard. A third Rama, Simenayin Gimel Sif Yudalit, Simshin Samachtes Sif Ches. You're not allowed to take a mashko and a collateral unless the loan is outstanding by 1 year, for 1 year. Why? Dina Malchus Dina. Isn't that also a personal matter? It's hard. It's hard to fit that Rama with all of these. So that's difficult. There's so much more to say, but we only have like a few minutes left, so maybe just one or two more. Let's go back to discuss Eretz Yisrael a little bit. The Rashba and the Ran write, L'shita san, there's no Din Malchus Din in Eretz Yisrael because we all own the land, the king doesn't own the land. The Tur in Simen Shin Samach Tes explicitly disagrees. He says Din Malchus Din does apply in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam in Hilchos Gezeilah, Din Malchus Din applies Bein B'Malchei Yisrael, Bein B'Malchei Umos HaOlam. Shulchan Aruch Shin Samach Tes Siv Vav, Din Malchus Din applies in Eretz Yisrael. So all those who want to follow the sheet of the Ran, it's against the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, the Ran says it, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass in that way. Why? Because it must be that it's about the Haskamas Ha'am and not about the ownership of the king owning the property. Now, according to the Ran, though, what about this Man Hazeh? We're dealing about, what about in America? What about in most countries? Does Dina Malchus and Dina apply? No one owns it. The Melech doesn't own it. It's the nation owns America. And we vote, we elect our government. So, hard to, it's really hard to follow the Ran. Because if you're following the Ran, you could just forget about Eretz Yisrael. You could pretty much throw Dina Malchus, Dina, you know, except for some tribes in Africa or something, you know. Like, you could pretty much throw Dina Malchus, Dina out the window.
Also,
okay, maybe Saudi Arabia also, right? Okay. The last thing we have to touch on, at least a little bit, is what if it's against the Dine Torah? The Shach in Simnai and Gimel, Sivkat Laman Tess, it's in source number 25, I think, says that which we say, that we don't say Dine Malchus Dina when it's against the Dine Torah. And he says, that's why I disagree with this Rama about waiting a year to take Namashkon, because Dine Torah is not like that. Chaznish just wonders that, what do you mean we don't say Dina Malchus Dina when it's against the Dine Torah? It's always against the Dine Torah. No? Isn't that the whole idea? That it's the Din of a Melech that doesn't fit with the Dine Torah? Or that's not part of the Dine Torah? Doesn't that make it against the Dine Torah? Anything. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that I'm not allowed to speed or that I have to pay you taxes or that I have to, you know, doesn't say any of that in the Torah. What makes something against the Dine Torah? You're not allowed to take my money just because I was driving 80 miles an hour in a 40 mile per hour zone, according to the Dine Torah. So why are you allowed to take my money now? It's always against the Dine Torah. But still, okay, so I violated Nisr. Who lets you take my money just because I violated Nisr? So Rav Asher suggests in the next Tshuva, in Chelek Beis and Minchas Asher, in Simen Kufchav Beis, Yisod, he says there's a difference between Din HaTorah and Musar HaTorah. Dina Malchus Adina can work when it's against the Dine HaTorah. But when it's against the Musar HaTorah, it doesn't work. What does he mean by Musar HaTorah?
Torah values.
It's really unbelievable. I mean, he's inventing a concept. Torah values. He says, for example, why does Dina Malchus Dina affect, and he's Miyashiv Old Ramaz, why does Dina Malchus Dina affect Yerusha Sabbas? Or not affect Yerusha Sabbas? Why would it not affect Yerusha Sabbas? We don't say Dina Malchus Dina that the daughter gets a Yerusha. Because what's the notion? Why is the government so interested that the daughter should get a Yerusha just like the son? Egalitarianism. Egalitarianism is antithetical to Torah values. No Dina Malchus Dina. It has to be about Torah values. Yerusha Sabal. The Dina Malchus is, the Baal is not Yerusha's sister. Why? Because the Din of Malchus is, if an Isha is Yoresh's as Baila, if an Isha is not Yoresh's as Baila, the Baal should not be Yoresh's Ishta. Egalitarianism. That's not a Torah value. It's against Torah value. But something that's not against Torah values. Look, the Torah doesn't want people to be driving 80 miles per hour in a 40 mile per hour zone, like you said, and don't kill other people. Right? The Torah doesn't want. So the Din of Malchus, which enforces that and which puts some oomph behind that, will be something we have to listen to. Why do we have to listen to it? Because it's in concert with Torah values. That's how you would have to l'chora suggest in order to understand this. That's how Rav Asher Weiss suggests. So we'll stop Dina Malchus there. And Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll do probably three different chapters from my Sefer. I'll probably just give out copies of different chapters, and we'll go through them.
And you'll be editing for me also.
I'm hoping that he'll have the first draft to send me all laid out by then, hopefully.